a dying star. She wondered if they ever ran out of power, witchlight stones, like flashlights run out of batteries. She hoped not. The idea of being plunged into sightless darkness in this creepy place filled her with a visceral terror. The smell of rotting fruit grew stronger as they reached the end of the stairs and found themselves in another long tunnel. This one opened out into a pavilion surrounded by spires of carved bone. A pavilion Clary remembered very well. Inlaid silver stars sprinkled the floor like precious confetti. In the center of the pavilion was a black table. Dark fluid had pooled on its slick surface and trickled across the floor in rivulets. When Clary had stood before the Council of Brothers, there had been a heavy silver sword hanging on the wall behind the table. The sword was gone now, and in its place, smeared across the wall, was a great fan of scarlet.
"Is that blood?"
Isabel whispered. She didn't sound afraid, just stunned. "Looks like it." Alec's eyes scanned the room. The shadows were as thick as paint and seemed full of movement. His grip was tight on his seraph blade.
"What could have happened?" Isabel said. "The Silent Brothers. I thought they were indestructible."
Her voice trailed off as Clary turned, the witchlight in her hand catching strange shadows among the spires. One was more strangely shaped than the others. She willed the witchlight to burn brighter, and it did, sending a lancing bolt of brightness into the distance. Impaled on one of the spires, like a worm on a hook, was the dead body of a Silent Brother. Hands, ribboned in blood, dangled just above the marble floor. His neck looked broken. Blood had pooled beneath him, clotted and black in the witchlight. Isabel gasped.
"Alec, do you see?"
"I see." Alec's voice was grim. "And I've seen worse. It's Jace I'm worried about." Isabel went forward and touched the black basalt table, her fingers skimming the surface.
"This blood is almost fresh.
Whatever happened, it happened not long ago." Alec moved toward the brother's impaled corpse. Smeared marks led away from the blood pool on the floor. "Footprints," he said. "Someone running." Alec indicated with a curled hand that the girl should follow him. They did, Isabel pausing only to wipe her bloody hands off on her soft leather leg guards. The path of footprints led from the pavilion and down a narrow tunnel, disappearing into darkness. When Alec stopped, looking around him, Clary pushed past him impatiently, letting the witchlight blaze a silvery white path of light ahead of them. She could see a set of double doors at the end of the tunnel. They were ajar. Jace. Somehow she sensed him, that he was close. She took off at a half-run, her boots clacking loudly against the hard floor. She heard Isabel call after her, and then Alec and Isabel were also running, hard on her heels. She burst through the doors at the end of the hall and found herself in a large, stone-bound room bisected by a row of metal bars sunk deep into the ground. Clary could just make out a slumped shape on the other side of the bars. Just outside the cell sprawled the limp form of a Silent Brother. Clary knew immediately that he was dead. It was the way he was lying, like a doll whose joints had been twisted the wrong way until they broke. His parchment-colored robes were half torn off. His scarred face, contorted into a look of utter terror, was still recognizable. It was Brother Jeremiah. She pushed past his body to the door of the cell. It was made of bars spaced close together and hinged on one side. There seemed to be no lock or knob that she could pull. She heard Alec, behind her, say her name, but her attention wasn't on him. It was on the door. Of course, there was no visible way to open it, she realized. The brothers didn't deal in what was visible, but rather what wasn't. Holding the witchlight in one hand, she scrabbled for her mother's stele with the other. From the other side of the bars came a noise, a sort of muffled gasp or whisper. She wasn't sure which, but she recognized the source. Jace. She slashed at the cell door with the tip of her stele, trying to hold the rune for open in her mind, even as it appeared, black and jagged against the hard metal. The electrum sizzled where the stele touched it. Open. She willed the door. Open, open,
open. A noise like ripping cloth tore through the room. Clary heard Isabel cry out as the door blew off its hinges entirely, crashing into the cell like a drawbridge falling. Clary could hear other noises, metal coming uncoupled from metal, a loud rattle like a handful of tossed pebbles. She ducked into the cell, the fallen door wobbling under her feet. Witchlight filled the small room, lighting it as bright as day. She barely noticed the rows of manacles, all of different metals, gold, silver, steel, and iron, as they came undone from the bolts in the walls and clattered to the stone floor. Her eyes were on the slumped figure in the corner. She could see the bright hair, the hand outstretched, the loose manacle lying a little distance away. His wrist was bare and bloody, the skin braceleted with ugly bruises. She went down on her knees, setting her stele aside, and gently turned him over. It was Jace. There was another bruise on his cheek, and his face was very white, but she could see the darting movement under his eyelids. A vein pulsed at his throat. He was alive. Relief went through her like a hot wave, undoing the tight cords of tension that had held her together this long. The witchlight fell to the floor beside her, where it continued to blaze. She stroked Jace's hair back from his forehead, with a tenderness that felt foreign to her. She'd never had any brothers or sisters, not even a cousin. She'd never had occasion to bind up wounds or kiss scraped knees or take care of anyone, really. But it was all right to feel tenderness toward Jace like this, she thought, unwilling to draw her hand back, even as Jace's eyelids twitched and he groaned. He was her brother. Why shouldn't she care what happened to him? His eyes opened. The pupils were huge, dilated. Maybe he'd banged his head. His eyes fixed on her with a look of dazed bemusement. Clary, he said, what are you doing here? I came to find you, she said, because it was the truth. A spasm went across his face. You're really here? I'm not dead, am I? No, she said, gliding her hand on the side of his face. You passed out is all. Probably hit your head, too. His hand came up to cover hers where it lay on his cheek. Worth it, he said in such a low voice that she wasn't sure it was what he said after all. What's going on? It was Alec, ducking through the low doorway, Isabel just behind him. Clary jerked her hand back, then cursed herself silently. She hadn't been doing anything wrong. Jace struggled into a sitting position. His face was gray, his shirt spotted with blood. Alec's look turned to one of concern. And are you all right? He demanded, kneeling down. What happened? Can you remember? Jace held up his uninjured hand. One question at a time, Alec. My head already feels like it's going to split open. Who did this to you? Isabel sounded both bewildered and furious. No one did anything to me. I did it to myself trying to get the manacles off. Jace looked down at his wrist. It looked as if he'd nearly scraped all the skin off it, and winced. Here, said both Clary and Alec at the same time, reaching out for his hand. Their eyes met, and Clary dropped her hand first. Alec took hold of Jace's wrist and drew out his stele. With a few quick flicks of his wrist, he drew an Iratze, a healing rune, just below the bracelet of bleeding skin. Thanks, said Jace, drawing his hand back. The injured part of his wrist was already beginning to knit back together. Brother Jeremiah is dead, said Clary. I know. Disdaining Alec's offered assistance, Jace pulled himself up to a standing position, using the wall to hold him up. He was murdered. Did the Silent Brothers kill each other? Isabel asked. I don't understand. I don't understand why they'd do that. They didn't, said Jace. Something killed them. I don't know what. A spasm of pain twisted his face. Oh, my head. Maybe we should go, said Clary nervously. Before whatever killed them. Comes back for us, said Jace. He looked down at his bloody shirt and bruised hand. I think it's gone, but I suppose he could still bring it back. Who could bring what back? Alec demanded, but Jace said nothing. His face had gone from gray to paper white, Alec caught him as he began to slide down the wall. Jace!
I'm all right, Jace protested, but his hand gripped Alec's sleeve tightly.
I can stand.
It looks to me like you're using a wall to prop you up. That's not my definition of standing.
It's leaning, Jace told him. Leaning comes right before standing.
Stop bickering, said Isabel, kicking a doused torch out of her way. We need to get out of here. If there's something out there nasty enough to kill the Silent Brothers, it'll make short work of us.
Izzy's right. We should go.
Clary retrieved the witchlight and stood up. Jace, are you okay to walk?
He can lean on me.
Alec drew Jace's arm across his shoulders. Jace leaned heavily against him.
Come on, Alec said gently. We'll fix you up when we get outside.
Slowly they moved toward the cell door, where Jace paused, staring down at the figure of Brother Jeremiah lying twisted on the paving stones. Isabel knelt down and drew the Silent Brother's brown wool hood down to cover his contorted face. When she straightened up, all their faces were grave.
I've never seen a Silent Brother afraid, Alec said. I didn't think it was possible for them to feel fear.
Everyone feels fear.
Jace was still very pale, and though he was cradling his injured hand against his chest, Clary didn't think it was because of physical pain. He looked distant, as if he had withdrawn into himself, hiding from something. They retraced their steps through the dark corridors and up the narrow steps that led to the Pavilion of the Speaking Stars. When they reached it, Clary noticed the thick scent of blood and burning as she hadn't when she'd passed through it before. Jace, leaning on Alec, looked around with a sort of mingled horror and confusion on his face. Clary saw that he was staring at the far wall where it was splattered thickly with blood, and she said, Jace, don't look. Then she felt stupid. He was a demon hunter, after all. He'd seen worse. He shook his head.
Something feels wrong.
Everything feels wrong here. Alec tilted his head toward the forest of arches that led away from the pavilion.
That's the fastest way out of here. Let's go.
They didn't talk much as they made their way back through the Bone City. Every shadow seemed to surge with movement, as if the darkness concealed creatures waiting to jump out at them. Isabel was whispering something under her breath. Though Clary couldn't hear the words themselves, it sounded like another language, something old, Latin maybe. When they reached the stairs that led up out of the city, Clary breathed a silent sigh of relief. The Bone City might have been beautiful once, but it was terrifying now. As they reached the last flight of steps, light stabbed into her eyes, making her cry out in surprise. She could faintly see the angel statue that stood at the head of the stairs, backlit with brilliant golden light, bright as day. She glanced around at the others. They looked as confused as she felt.
The sun couldn't have risen yet, could it? Isabel murmured. How long were we down here?
Alec checked his watch.
Not that long.
Jace muttered something, too low for anyone else to hear him. Alec craned his ear down.
What did you say?
Witchlight, Jace said, more loudly this time.
Isabel hurried up the stairs, Clary behind her, Alec just behind them, struggling to half-carry Jace up the steps. At the head of the stairs, Isabel stopped suddenly as if frozen. Clary called out to her, but she didn't move. A moment later, Clary was standing beside her, and it was her turn to stare around in amazement. The garden was full of shadow hunters. 20, maybe 30 of them in dark hunting regalia, inked with marks, each holding a blazing witchlight stone. At the front of the group stood Mayris, in black shadow hunter armor and a cloak, her hood thrown back. Behind her ranged dozens of strangers, men and women Clary had never seen, but who bore the marks of the Nephilim on their arms and faces. One of them, a handsome ebony-skinned man, turned to stare at Clary and Isabel, and beside her, at Jason Alec, who had come up from the steps and stood blinking in the unexpected light.
By the angel, the man said. Mayris, there was already someone down there.
Mayris's mouth opened in a silent gasp when she saw Isabel. Then she closed it, her lips tightening into a thin white line like a slash drawn in chalk across her face. I know, Malik, she said. These are my children.
Chapter 7 The Mortal Sword. A muttering gasp went through the crowd. The ones who were hooded threw their hoods back, and Clary could see from the looks on the faces of Jace, Alec, and Isabel that many of the shadow hunters in the courtyard were familiar to them.
By the angel!
Mayriss's incredulous gaze swept from Alec to Jace, passed over Clary, and returned to her daughter. Jace had moved away from Alec the moment Mayriss spoke, and he stood a little away from the other three, his hands in his pockets as Isabel nervously twisted her golden-white whip in her hands. Alec, meanwhile, seemed to be fidgeting with his cell phone, though Clary couldn't imagine who he might be calling.
"What are you doing here? Alec? Isabel? There was a distress call from the Silent City."
"We answered it," Alec said.
His gaze moved anxiously over the gathered crowd. Clary could hardly blame him for his nerves. This was the largest crowd of adult shadowhunters, of shadowhunters in general, that she herself had ever seen. She kept looking from face to face, marking the differences between them. They varied widely in age and race and overall appearance, and yet they all gave the same impression of immense, contained power. She could sense their subtle gazes on her, examining her, evaluating. One of them, a woman with rippling silver hair, was staring at her so fiercely that there was nothing subtle about it. Clary blinked and looked away as Alec continued.
"You weren't at the Institute, and we couldn't raise anyone, so we came ourselves."
"Alec!"
"It doesn't matter anyway," Alec said.
"They're dead. The Silent Brothers, they're all dead. They've been murdered."
This time there was no sound from the assembled crowd. Instead, they seemed to go still, the way a pride of lions might go still when it spotted a gazelle.
"Dead?" Mayriss repeated. "What do you mean, they're dead?"
"I think it's quite clear what he means."
A woman in a long gray coat had appeared suddenly at Mayriss's side. In the flickering light, she looked to Clary like a sort of Edward Gorey caricature, all sharp angles and pulled back hair and eyes like black pits scraped out of her face. She held a glimmering chunk of witchlight on a long silver chain, looped through the skinniest fingers Clary had ever seen.
"They're all dead?" she asked, addressing herself to Alec. "You found no one alive in the city?"
Alec shook his head. "Not that we saw, Inquisitor."
So that was the Inquisitor, Clary realized. She certainly looked like someone capable of tossing teenage boys into dungeon cells, for no reason other than that she didn't like their attitude.
"That you saw," repeated the Inquisitor,
her eyes like hard, glittering beads. She turned to Mayriss.
"There may yet be survivors. I would send your people into the city for a thorough check."
Mayriss's lips tightened. From what very little Clary had learned about Mayriss, she knew that Jace's adoptive mother didn't like being told what to do.
"Very well."
She turned to the rest of the shadow hunters. There were not as many, Clary was coming to realize, as she had initially thought, closer to 20 than 30, though the shock of their appearance had made them seem like a teeming crowd. Mayriss spoke to Malik in a low voice. He nodded. Taking the arm of the silver-haired woman, he led the shadow hunters toward the entrance to the Bone City. As one after another descended the stairs, taking their witchlight with them, the glow in the courtyard began to fade. The last one in line was the woman with the silver hair. Halfway down the stairs she paused, turned, and looked back, directly at Clary. Her eyes were full of a terrible yearning, as if she longed desperately to tell Clary something. After a moment she drew her hood back up over her face and vanished into the shadows. Mayriss broke the silence.
"Why would anyone murder the Silent Brothers? They're not warriors. They don't carry battle marks."
"Don't be naive, Mayriss," said the Inquisitor. "This was no random attack. The Silent Brothers may not be warriors, but they are primarily guardians, and very good at their jobs. Not to mention hard to kill. Someone wanted something from the Bone City, and was willing to kill the Silent Brothers to get it. This was premeditated."
"What makes you so sure?"
"That wild goose chase that called us all out to Central Park? The dead Fey Child?"
"I wouldn't call that a wild goose chase. The Fey Child was drained of blood like the others. These killings could cause serious trouble between the Night Children and other Downworlders."
Distractions, said the Inquisitor dismissively. He wanted us gone from the Institute so that no one would respond to the brothers when they called for aid. Ingenious, really. But then he always was ingenious. He? It was Isabel who spoke, her face very pale between the black wings of her hair. You mean... Jace's next word sent a shock through Clary, as if she'd touched a live current. Valentine, he said. Valentine took the mortal sword. That's why he killed the Silent Brothers. A thin, sudden smile curved on the Inquisitor's face, as if Jace had said something that pleased her very much. Alec started and turned to stare at Jace. Valentine, but you didn't say he was here.
Nobody asked.
He couldn't have killed the brothers. They were torn apart. No one person could have done all that.
He probably had demonic help, said the Inquisitor. He's used demons to aid him before. And with the protection of the cup on him, he could summon some very dangerous creatures. More dangerous than Raveners, she added with a curl of her lip. And though she didn't look at Clary when she said it, the words felt somehow like a verbal slap.
Clary's faint hope that the Inquisitor hadn't noticed or recognized her vanished.
Or the pathetic Forsaken.
I don't know about that. Jace was very pale, with hectic spots like fever on his cheekbones.
But it was Valentine. I saw him. In fact, he had the sword with him when he came down to the cells and taunted me through the bars. It was like a bad movie, except he didn't actually twirl his mustache.
Clary looked at him worriedly. He was talking too fast, she thought, and looked unsteady on his feet. The Inquisitor didn't seem to notice.
So you're saying that Valentine told you all this? He told you he killed the Silent Brothers because he wanted the Angel's sword?
What else did he tell you? Did he tell you where he was going? What he plans to do with the two mortal instruments? Mayris asked quickly. Jace shook his head. The Inquisitor moved toward him, her coat swirling around her like drifting smoke. Her gray eyes and gray mouth were drawn into tight horizontal lines.
I don't believe you.
Jace just looked at her.
I didn't think you would.
I doubt the Clave will believe you either, Alec said hotly. Jace isn't a liar.
Use your brain, Alexander, said the Inquisitor, not taking her eyes off Jace. Leave aside your loyalty to your friend for a moment. What's the likelihood that Valentine stopped by his son's cell for a paternal chat about the Soul Sword, and didn't mention what he planned to do with it, or even where he was going?
"Sio credesse che mia risposta fosse," Jace said in a language Clary didn't know. "A persona che mai tornasse al mondo."
Dante, the Inquisitor looked dryly amused.
The Inferno. You're not in hell yet, Jonathan Morgenstern, though if you insist on lying to the Clave, you'll wish you were.
She turned back to the others.
And doesn't it seem odd to anyone that the Soul Sword should disappear the night before Jonathan Morgenstern is supposed to stand trial by its blade? And that his father is the one who took it?
Jace looked shocked at that, his lips parting slightly in surprise, as if this had never occurred to him.
My father didn't take the sword for me. He took it for him. I doubt he even knew about the trial.
How awfully convenient for you, regardless, and for him. He won't have to worry about you spilling his secrets.
Yeah, Jay said. He's terrified I'll tell everyone that he's always really wanted to be a ballerina.
The Inquisitor simply stared at him.
I don't know any of my father's secrets, he said less sharply. He never told me anything.
The Inquisitor regarded him with something close to boredom.
If your father didn't take the sword to protect you, then why did he take it?
It's a mortal instrument, said Clary. It's powerful, like the cup. Valentine likes power.
The cup has an immediate use, said the Inquisitor. He can use it to make an army. The sword is used in trials. I can't see how that would interest him.
He might have done it to destabilize the Clave, suggested Mayris. To sap our morale. To say that there is nothing we can protect from him if he wants it badly enough. It was a surprisingly good argument, Clary thought, but Mayris didn't sound very convinced.
The fact is...
But they never got to hear what the fact was, because at that moment, Jace raised his hand as if he meant to ask a question, looked startled, and sat down on the grass suddenly, as if his legs had given out. Alec knelt down next to him, but Jace waved away his concern.
"Leave me alone. I'm fine."
"You're not fine." Clary joined Alec on the grass, Jace watching her with eyes whose pupils were huge and dark, despite the witchlight illuminating the night. She glanced down at his wrist, where Alec had drawn the aratze. The mark was gone, not even a faint white scar left behind to show that it had worked. Her eyes met Alec's, and she saw her own anxiety reflected there. "Something's wrong with him," she said. "Something serious."
"He probably needs a healing rune."
The Inquisitor looked as if she were exquisitely annoyed at Jace for being injured during events of such importance.
"An aratze, or..." "We tried that," said Alec. "It isn't working. I think there's something of demonic origin going on here."
"Like demon poison?" Maris moved as if she meant to go to Jace, but the Inquisitor held her back.
"He's shamming," she said. "He ought to be in the Silent City cells right now."
Alec rose to his feet at that.
"You can't say that! Look at him!"
He gestured at Jace, who had slumped back on the grass, his eyes closed.
"He can't even stand up. He needs doctors. He needs..." "The Silent Brothers are dead," said the Inquisitor. "Are you suggesting a mundane hospital?"
"No." Alec's voice was tight. "I thought he could go to Magnus." Isabel made a sound somewhere between a sneeze and a cough. She turned away as the Inquisitor looked at Alec blankly.
"Magnus?"
"He's a warlock," said Alec. "Actually, he's the High Warlock of Brooklyn."
"You mean Magnus Bane," said Maris.
"He has a reputation." "He healed me after I fought a greater demon," said Alec. "The Silent Brothers couldn't do anything, but Magnus..."
"It's ridiculous," said the Inquisitor. "What you want is to help Jonathan escape."
"He's not well enough to escape," Isabel said. "Can't you see that?"
"Magnus would never let that happen," Alec said with a quelling glance at his sister. "He's not interested in crossing the clave." "And how would he propose preventing it?"
The Inquisitor's voice dripped acid sarcasm.
"Jonathan is a shadow hunter. We are not so easy to keep under lock and key."
"Maybe you should ask him," Alec suggested. The Inquisitor smiled her razor smile.
"By all means. Where is he?"
Alec glanced down at the phone in his hand and then back at the thin gray figure in front of him.
"He's here," he said.
He raised his voice.
"Magnus? Magnus, come on out!"
Even the Inquisitor's eyebrows shot up when Magnus strode through the gate. The High Warlock was wearing black leather pants, a belt with a buckle in the shape of a jeweled M, and a cobalt-blue Prussian military jacket open over a white lace shirt. He shimmered with layers of glitter. His gaze rested for a moment on Alec's face with amusement and a hint of something else before moving on to Jace, prone on the grass.
"Is he dead?" he inquired. "He looks dead."
"No," snapped Maris. "He's not dead."
"Have you checked? I could kick him if you want."
Magnus moved toward Jace.
"Stop that," the Inquisitor snapped,
sounding like Clary's third-grade teacher demanding that she stop doodling on her desk with a marker.
"He's not dead, but he's injured," she added, almost grudgingly. "Your medical skills are required. Jonathan needs to be well enough for the interrogation." "Fine, but it'll cost you."
"I'll pay it," said Maris. The Inquisitor didn't even blink.
"Very well, but he can't remain at the Institute. Just because the sword is gone doesn't mean the interrogation won't proceed as planned. And in the meantime, the boy must be held under observation. He's clearly a flight risk."
"A flight risk?" Isabel demanded. "You act as if he tried to escape from the Silent City."
"Well," the Inquisitor said, "he's no longer in his cell now, is he?"
"That's not fair. You couldn't have expected him to stay down there surrounded by dead people."
"Not fair?
Not fair?
Do you honestly expect me to believe that you and your brother were motivated to come to the Bone City because of a distress call, and not because you wanted to free Jonathan from what you clearly consider unnecessary confinement? And do you expect me to believe you won't try to free him again if he's allowed to remain at the Institute?
Do you think you can fool me as easily as you fool your parents, Isabel Lightwood?
Isabel turned scarlet. Magnus cut in before she could reply.
Look, it's not a problem, he said. I can keep Jace at my place easily enough.
The Inquisitor turned to Alec.
Your warlock does realize, she said, that Jonathan is a witness of utmost importance to the Clave.
He's not my warlock. The tops of Alec's angular cheekbones flared a dark red.
I've held prisoners for the Clave before, Magnus said.
The joking edge had left his voice.
I think you'll find I have an excellent record in that department. My contract is one of the best.
Was it Clary's imagination, or did his eyes seem to linger on Mayris when he said that? She didn't have time to wonder. The Inquisitor made a sharp noise that might have been amusement or disgust, and said,
It's settled, then. Let me know when he's well enough to talk, Warlock.
I've still got plenty of questions for him.
Of course, Magnus said.
But Clary got the sense that he wasn't really listening to her. He crossed the lawn gracefully and came to stand over Jace. He was as tall as he was thin, and when Clary glanced up to look at him, she was surprised how many stars he blotted out.
Can he talk? Magnus asked Clary, indicating Jace.
Before Clary could respond, Jace's eyes slid open. He looked up at the warlock, dazed and dizzy.
What are you doing here?
Magnus grinned down at Jace, and his teeth sparkled like sharpened diamonds.
Hey, roommate, he said.
Part 2. The Gates of Hell. Chapter 8. The Seelie Court.
In the dream, Clary was a child again, walking down the narrow strip of beach near the boardwalk at Coney Island. The air was thick with the smell of hot dogs and roasting peanuts, and with the shouts of children. The sea surged in the distance, its blue-gray surface alive with sunlight. She could see herself as if from a distance, wearing oversized child's pajamas. The hems of the pajama bottoms dragged along the beach. Damp sand grated between her toes, and her hair hung heavily against the nape of her neck. There were no clouds, and the sky was blue and clear, but she shivered as she walked along the perimeter of the water toward a figure she could see only dimly in the distance. As she approached, the figure became suddenly clear, as if Clary had focused the lens of a camera. It was her mother, kneeling in the ruins of a half-built sandcastle. She wore the same white dress Valentine had put her in at Renwick's. In her hand was a twisted bit of driftwood, silvery from long exposure to salt and wind.
"Have you come to help me?"
her mother said, raising her head. Jocelyn's hair was undone, and it blew free in the wind, making her look younger than she was.
"There's so much to do and so little time."
Clary swallowed against the hard lump in her throat.
"Mom, I've missed you, Mom."
Jocelyn smiled.
I've missed you too, honey. But I'm not gone, you know. I'm only sleeping.
Then how do I wake you up?
Clary cried. But her mother was looking out to sea, her face troubled. The sky had turned a twilight iron gray, and the black clouds looked like heavy stones.
Come here, said Jocelyn.
And when Clary came to her, she said,
Hold out your arm.
Clary did. Jocelyn moved the driftwood over her skin. The touch stung like the burning of a stele, and left the same thick black line behind. The rune Jocelyn drew was a shape Clary had never seen before, but she found it instinctively soothing to her eye.
What does this do?
It should protect you. Clary's mother released her.
Against what?
Jocelyn didn't answer, just looked out toward the sea. Clary turned and saw that the ocean had drawn far out, leaving brackish piles of garbage, heaps of seaweed and flopping desperate fish in its wake. The water had gathered itself into a huge wave, rising like the side of a mountain, like an avalanche ready to fall. The shouts of children from the boardwalk had turned into screams. As Clary stared in horror, she saw that the side of the wave was as transparent as a membrane, and through it she could see things that seemed to move under the surface of the sea, huge, dark, shapeless things pushing against the skin of the water. She threw up her hands and woke up gasping, her heart slamming painfully against her ribs. She was in her bed in the spare room in Luke's house, An afternoon light was filtering in through the curtains. Her hair was plastered to her neck with sweat, and her arm burned and ached. When she sat up and flipped on the bedside light, she saw without surprise the black mark that ran the length of her forearm. When she went into the kitchen, she found Luke had left breakfast for her in the form of a Danish in a grease-spotted cardboard box. He'd also left a note stuck to the fridge. Gone to the hospital. Clary ate the Danish on the way to meet Simon. He was supposed to be on the corner of Bedford by the L-train stop at 5, but he wasn't. She felt a faint tug of anxiety before she remembered the used record store on the corner of 6th. Sure enough, he was sorting through the CDs in the new arrivals section. He wore a rust-colored corduroy jacket with a torn sleeve and a blue T-shirt bearing the logo of a headphone-wearing boy dancing with a chicken. He grinned when he saw her.
"Eric thinks we should change the name of our band to Mojo Pie," he said, by way of greeting.
"What is it now? I forgot."
"Champagne Enema," he said, selecting a Yola Tango CD.
"Change it," Clary said. "By the way, I know what your T-shirt means."
"No, you don't."
He headed up to the front of the store to buy his CD.
"You're a good girl."
Outside, the wind was cold and brisk. Clary drew her striped scarf up around her chin. "I was worried when I didn't see you at the L stop." Simon pulled his knit cap down, wincing as if the sunlight hurt his eyes.
"Sorry, I remembered I wanted this CD and I thought..."
"It's fine." She waved a hand at him. "It's me. I panic way too easily these days."
"Well, after what you've been through, no one could blame you."
Simon sounded contrite.
"I still can't believe what happened to the Silent City. I can't believe you were there."
"Neither could Luke. He freaked out completely."
"I bet."
They were walking through McCarran Park, the grass underfoot turning winter brown, the air full of golden light. Dogs were running off their leashes among the trees. "Everything changes in my life, and the world stays the same," Clary thought.
"Have you talked to Jace since it happened?"
Simon asked, keeping his voice neutral. "No, but I checked in with Isabel and Alec a few times. Apparently he's fine."
"Did he ask to see you? Is that why we're going?"
"He doesn't have to ask." Clary tried to keep the irritation out of her voice as they turned onto Magnus's street. It was lined with low warehouse buildings that had been converted into lofts and studios for artistic and wealthy residents. Most of the cars parked along the shallow curb were expensive. As they neared Magnus's building, Clary saw a lanky figure unfurl itself from where it had been sitting on the stoop. Alec. He was wearing a long black coat made of the tough, slightly shiny material shadow hunters like to use for their gear. His hands and throat were marked with runes, and it was evident from the faint shimmer in the air around him that he was glamored into invisibility.
"I didn't know you were bringing the mundane."
His blue eyes flicked uneasily over Simon.
"That's what I like about you people," said Simon. "You always make me feel so welcome."
"Oh, come on, Alec," said Clary. "What's the big deal? It's not like Simon hasn't been here before." Alec heaved a theatrical sigh, shrugged, and led the way up the stairs. He unlocked the door to Magnus's apartment using a thin silver key, which he tucked back into the breast pocket of his jacket the moment he'd finished, as if he'd hoped to keep his companions from seeing it. In daylight, the apartment looked the way an empty nightclub might look during off-hours, dark, dirty, and unexpectedly small. The walls were bare, spackled here and there with glitter paint, and the floorboards where fairies had danced a week ago were warped and shiny with age. "Hello, hello," Magnus swept toward them. He was wearing a floor-length green silk dressing gown, open over a silver mesh shirt and black jeans. A glittering red stone winked in his left ear. "Alec, my darling, Clary, and Ratboy." He swept a bow toward Simon, who looked annoyed. "To what do I owe the pleasure?"
"We came to see Jace," Clary said. "Is he all right?"
"I don't know," Magnus said. "Does he normally just lie on the floor like that without moving?"
"What?"
Alec began, and broke off as Magnus laughed. "That's not funny."
"You're so easy to tease. And yes, your friend is just fine.
Well, except that he keeps putting all my things away and trying to clean up. Now I can't find anything.
He's compulsive.
Jace does like things neat, Clary said, thinking of his monk-like room at the Institute.
Well, I don't.
Magnus was watching Alec out of the corner of his eye while Alec stared off into the middle distance, scowling.
Jace is in there if you want to see him.
He pointed toward a door at the end of the room.
In there turned out to be a medium-sized den, surprisingly cozy, with smudged walls, velvet curtains drawn across the windows, and cloth-draped armchairs marooned like fat, colorful icebergs in a sea of nubbly beige carpeting. A hot pink couch was made up with sheets and a blanket. Next to it was a duffel bag stuffed full of clothes. No light came through the heavy curtains. The only source of illumination was a flickering television screen, which glowed brightly despite the fact that the television itself was not plugged in.
"What's on?" Magnus inquired.
"What not to wear?" came a familiar drawling voice, emanating from a sprawled figure in one of the armchairs.
He sat forward, and for a moment Clary thought Jace might get up and greet them. Instead, he shook his head at the screen.
"High-waisted khaki pants? Who wears those?"
He turned and glared at Magnus.
"Nearly unlimited supernatural power," he said, "and all you do is use it to watch reruns? What a waste."
"Also, TiVo accomplishes much the same thing," pointed out Simon.
"My way is cheaper."
Magnus clapped his hands together, and the room was suddenly flooded with light. Jay slumped in the chair, raised an arm to cover his face.
"Can you do that without magic?"
"Actually," said Simon, "yes, if you watched infomercials, you'd know that." Clary sensed the mood in the room was deteriorating.
"That's enough," she said.
She looked at Jace, who had lowered his arm and was blinking resentfully into the light.
"We need to talk," she said. "All of us, about what we're going to do now."
I was going to watch Project Runway," said Jace. "It's on next."
"No, you're not," said Magnus. He snapped his fingers, and the TV went off, releasing a small puff of smoke as the picture died.
"You need to deal with this." "Suddenly you're interested in solving my problems?"
"I'm interested in getting my apartment back. I'm tired of you cleaning all the time." Magnus snapped his fingers again menacingly.
"Get up."
"Or you'll be the next one to go up in smoke," said Simon with relish.
"There's no need to clarify my finger snap," said Magnus. "The implication was clear in the snap itself."
"Fine." Jace got up out of the chair. He was barefoot, and there was a line of purplish-silver skin around his wrist where his injuries were still healing. He looked tired, but not as if he were still in pain.
"You want a roundtable meeting? We can have a roundtable meeting."
"I love roundtables," said Magnus brightly. "They suit me so much better than square." In the living room, Magnus conjured up an enormous circular table surrounded by 5 high-backed wooden chairs.
"That's amazing," Clary said, sliding into a chair. It was surprisingly comfortable. "How can you create something out of nothing like that?"
"You can't," said Magnus. "Everything comes from somewhere. These come from an antiques reproduction store on 5th Avenue, for instance. And these..."
Suddenly, 5 white wax paper cups appeared on the table, steam rising gently from the holes in their plastic lids.
"Come from Dean and DeLuca on Broadway."
"That seems like stealing, doesn't it?" Simon pulled a cup toward him. He drew the lid back.
"Ooh, mochaccino." He looked at Magnus. "Did you pay for these?"
"Sure," said Magnus, while Jace and Alec snickered.
"I make dollar bills magically appear in their cash register."
"Really?"
"No."
Magnus popped the lid off his own coffee.
"But you can pretend I did if it makes you feel better."
"So, first order of business is what?"
Clary put her hands around her own coffee cup. Maybe it was stolen, but it was also hot and full of caffeine. She could stop by Dean and DeLuca and drop a dollar in their tip jar some other time.
"Figuring out what's going on would be a start," she said, blowing on her foam.
"Jace, you said what happened in the Silent City was Valentine's fault?" Jace stared down at his coffee.
"Yes."
Alec put his hand on Jace's arm.
"What happened? Did you see him?"
"I was in the cell," said Jace, his voice dead.
I heard the Silent Brother screaming. Then Valentine came downstairs with something. I don't know what it was. Like smoke with glowing eyes. A demon, but not like any I've ever seen before. He came up to the bars and he told me...
Told you what?
Alec's hand slid up Jace's arm to his shoulder. Magnus cleared his throat. Alec dropped his hand, red-faced, while Simon grinned into his undrunk coffee.
Millartek, Jace said. He wanted the Soul Sword and he killed the Silent Brothers to get it.
Magnus was frowning.
Alec, last night when the Silent Brothers called for your help, where was the Conclave? Why was no one at the Institute?
Alec looked surprised to be asked.
There was a Downworlder murder in Central Park last night. A fairy child was killed. The body was drained of blood.
I bet the Inquisitor thinks I did that, too, said Jace. My reign of terror continues.
Magnus stood up and went to the window. He pushed the curtain back, letting in just enough light to silhouette his hawk-like profile.
Blood, he said half to himself. I had a dream 2 nights ago. I saw a city all of blood, with towers made of bone, and blood ran in the streets like water.
Simon slewed his eyes over to Jace.
Is standing by the window muttering about blood something he does all the time?
No, said Jace. Sometimes he sits on the couch and does it.
Alec shot them both a sharp glance.
Magnus, what's wrong?
The blood, said Magnus again. It can't be a coincidence.
He seemed to be looking down at the street. Sunset was coming on fast over the silhouette of the city in the distance. The sky was striped with bars of aluminum and rosy gold.
There have been several murders this week, he said.
Of Downworlders?
A warlock, killed in an apartment tower down by the South Street seaport. His neck and wrists were cut and the body drained of blood. And a werewolf was killed at the Hunter's Moon a few days ago. The throat was cut in that case as well.
It sounds like vampires, said Simon, suddenly very pale.
I don't think so, Jace said. At least Raphael said it wasn't the Night Children's work. He seemed adamant about it.
Yeah, 'cause he's trustworthy, muttered Simon.
In this case, I think he was telling the truth, said Magnus, drawing the curtain closed. His face was angular, shadowed. As he came back to the table, Clary saw that he was carrying a heavy book bound in green cloth. She didn't think he'd been holding it a few moments ago.
There was a strong demonic presence at both locations. I think someone else was responsible for all 3 deaths. Not Raphael and his tribe, but Valentine.
Clary's eyes went to Jace. His mouth was a thin line, but why do you say that, was all he asked.
The Inquisitor thought the fairy murder was a diversion, she said quickly, so that he could plunder the Silent City without worrying about the Conclave.
There are easier ways to create a diversion, said Jace, and it is unwise to antagonize the fair folk. He wouldn't have murdered one of the clan of fairy if he didn't have a reason.
He had a reason, said Magnus. There was something he wanted from that fairy child, just as there was something he wanted from the warlock and the werewolf he killed.
What's that? Asked Alec.
Their blood, said Magnus, and opened the green book.
The thin parchment pages had words written on them that glowed like fire.
Ah, he said, here.
He looked up, tapping the page with a sharp fingernail. Alec leaned forward.
You won't be able to read it, Magnus warned him. It's written in a demon language, Pergadic.
I can recognize the drawing, though. That's Millartek. I've seen it before in books.
Alec pointed at an illustration of a silver sword, familiar to Clary. It was the one she'd noticed was missing from the wall of the Silent City.
The Ritual of Infernal Conversion, Magnus said. That's what Valentine's trying to do.
The what of what? Clary frowned.
Every magical object has an alliance, Magnus explained. The alliance of the Soul Sword is seraphic, like those angel knives you shadow hunters use, but 1,000 times more so, because its power was drawn from the angel himself, not simply from the invocation of an angelic name. What Valentine wants to do is reverse its alliance, make it an object of demonic rather than angelic power.
Lawful good to lawful evil, said Simon, pleased.
He's quoting Dungeons and Dragons, said Clary. Ignore him. As the angel's sword, Melartek's use to Valentine would be limited, said Magnus. But as a sword whose demonic power is equal to the angelic power it once possessed, well, there is much it could offer him. Power over demons, for one. Not just the limited protection the cup might offer, but power to call demons to him, to force them to do his bidding.
A demon army? Said Alec.
This guy is big on armies, observed Simon. Power even to bring them into Idris, perhaps, Magnus finished.
I don't know why he'd want to go there, Simon said. That's where all the demon hunters are, aren't they? Wouldn't they just annihilate the demon guys?
Demons come from other dimensions, said Jace. We don't know how many of them there are. Their numbers could be infinite. The wardings keep most of them back, but if they all came through at once...
Infinite, Clary thought.
She remembered the greater demon, Abaddon, and tried to imagine hundreds more of it, or thousands. Her skin felt cold and exposed.
I don't get it, said Alec. What does the ritual have to do with dead downworlders?
To perform the ritual of conversion, you need to seethe the sword until it's red hot, then cool it four times, each time in the blood of a downworld child. Once in the blood of a child of Lilith, once in the blood of a child of the moon, once in the blood of the child of the night, and once in the blood of a child of fairy, Magnus explained.
Oh my God, said Clary. So he's not done killing. There's still one more child to go.
Two more. He didn't succeed with the werewolf child. He was interrupted before he could get all the blood he needed. Magnus shut the book, dust puffing out from its pages. Whatever Valentine's ultimate goal is, he's already more than halfway to reversing the sword. He's probably able to garner some power from it already. He could already be calling on demons.
But you'd think if he were doing that, there'd be reports of disturbances, excess demon activity, Jay said. But the Inquisitor said the opposite is true, that everything's been quiet.
And so it might be, said Magnus, if Valentine were calling all the demons to him. No wonder it's quiet. The group stared at one another. Before anyone could think of a single thing to say, a sharp noise cut through the room, making Clary start. Hot coffee spilled onto her wrist, and she gasped at the sudden pain.
It's my mother, said Alec, checking his phone. I'll be right back.
He went over to the window, head down, voice too low to overhear.
Let me see, said Simon, taking Clary's hand.
There was an angry red blotch on her wrist where the hot liquid had scalded her.
It's okay, she said. No big deal.
Simon lifted her hand and kissed the injury.
All better now.
Clary made a startled noise. He had never done anything like that before. Then again, that was the sort of thing boyfriends did, didn't they? Drawing her wrist back, she looked across the table and saw Jay staring at them, his golden eyes blazing.
You're a shadow hunter. He said. You know how to deal with injuries.
He slid his stele across the table toward her.
Use it.
No, Clary said, and pushed the stele back across the table at him. Jay slammed his hand down on the stele.
Clary?
She said she doesn't want it, said Simon.
Ha ha.
Ha ha? Jace looked incredulous.
That's your comeback?
Alec, folding his phone, approached the table with a puzzled look. What's going on?
We seem to be trapped in an episode of One Life to Waste, Magnus observed. It's all very dull.
Alec flicked a strand of hair out of his eyes. I told my mother about the infernal conversion.
Let me guess, said Jace. She didn't believe you. Plus, she blamed everything on me.
Alec frowned. Not exactly. She said she'd bring it up with the Conclave, but that she didn't have the Inquisitor's ear right now. I get the feeling the Inquisitor has pushed Mom out of the way and taken over. She sounded angry. The phone in his hand rang again. He held up a finger.
Sorry, it's Isabel. One sec.
He wandered to the window, phone in hand. Jace glanced over at Magnus.
I think you're right about the werewolf at the Hunter's Moon. The guy who found his body said someone else was in the alley with him. Someone who ran off.
Magnus nodded.
It sounds to me like Valentine was interrupted in the middle of doing whatever it is he does to get the blood he needs. He'll probably try again with a different lycanthrope child.
I ought to warn Luke, Clary said, half rising out of her chair. Wait. Alec was back, phone in hand, a peculiar expression on his face.
What did Isabel want? Jace asked.
Alec hesitated.
Isabel says the Queen of the Seelie Court has requested an audience with us. Sure, said Magnus. And Madonna wants me as a backup dancer on her next world tour.
Alec looked puzzled. Who's Madonna?
Who's the Queen of the Seelie Court? Said Clary.
She is the Queen of Fairy, said Magnus. Well, the local one, anyway.
Jace put his head in his hands.
Tell Isabel no.
But she thinks it's a good idea, Alec protested.
Then tell her no twice.
Alec frowned. What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, just that some of Isabel's ideas are world beaters, and some are total disasters.
Remember that idea she had about using abandoned subway tunnels to get around under the city? Talk about giant rats.
Let's not, said Simon. I'd rather not talk about rats at all, in fact.
This is different, said Alec. She wants us to go to the Seelie Court.
You're right, this is different, said Jace. This is her worst idea ever.
She knows a knight in the court, said Alec. He told her that the Seelie Queen is interested in meeting with us. Isabel overheard my conversation with our mother, and she thought if we could explain our theory about Valentine and the Soul Sword to the Queen, the Seelie Court would side with us. Maybe even ally with us against Valentine.
Is it safe to go there? Clary asked.
Of course it's not safe, Jay said, as if she'd asked the stupidest question he'd ever heard.
She shot a glare at him.
I don't know anything about the Seelie Court. Vampires and werewolves I get. There are enough movies about them, but fairies are little kid stuff. I dressed up as a fairy for Halloween when I was 8. My mom made me a hat shaped like a buttercup.
I remember that. Simon had leaned back in his chair, arms crossed over his chest.
I was a transformer.
Actually, I was a Decepticon.
Can we get back to the point? Magnus asked.
Fine, Alec said. Isabel thinks, and I agree, that it's not a good idea to ignore the fair folk. If they want to talk, what harm can it do? Besides, if the Seelie Court were on our side, the Clave would have to listen to what we have to say.
Jace laughed without any humor. The fair folk don't help humans.
Shadow hunters are not human, Clary said. Not really.
We are not much better to them, said Jace. They can't be worse than vampires, Simon muttered. And you did all right with them.
Jace looked at Simon as if he were something he'd found growing under the sink.
Did all right with them? By which I take it you mean we survived?
Well,
fairies, Jace went on, as if Simon hadn't spoken, are the offspring of demons and angels, with the beauty of angels and the viciousness of demons. A vampire might attack you if you entered its domain. But a fairy could make you dance until you died with your legs ground down into stumps, trick you into a midnight swim and drag you screaming underwater until your lungs burst, fill your eyes with fairy dust until you gouge them out at the roots.
Jace, Clary snapped, cutting him off mid-rant. Shut up! Jesus, that's enough!
Look, it's easy to outsmart a werewolf or a vampire, Jace said. They're no smarter than anyone else. But fairies live for hundreds of years, and they're as cunning as snakes. They can't lie, but they love to engage in creative truth-telling. They'll find out whatever it is you want most in the world and give it to you, with a sting in the tail of the gift that will make you regret you ever wanted it in the first place. He sighed. They're not really about helping people. More about harm disguised as help.
And you don't think we're smart enough to know the difference? Asked Simon.
I don't think you're smart enough not to get turned into a rat by accident.
Simon glared at him.
I don't see that it matters what you think we should do, he said. Considering that you can't go with us in the first place, you can't go anywhere.
Jace stood up, knocking his chair back violently.
You are not taking Clary to the Seelie Court without me, and that is final.
Clary stared at him with her mouth open. He was flushed with anger, teeth gritted, veins corded in his neck. He was also avoiding looking at her.
I can take care of Clary, Alec said, and there was hurt in his voice.
whether because Jace had doubted his ability